This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. About 40% of breast cancer patients in Malaysia are diagnosed at the advanced stages. At this late stage, is it inevitable that the breast has to be removed? In conjunction with Breast Cancer Awareness Month, coming up in October, we're exploring surgical options for breast cancer treatment together with consultant breast and oncoplastic surgeon, Dr. Tan Gee Hui from Park City Medical Center. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you.
Dr. Tan, what is the prevalence of breast cancer in Malaysia and are we seeing an increase in the number of these diagnoses?
We think that we're actually seeing an increase in number. And then on average, we'll say about 5,000 new cases is diagnosed every year. And also it translates to the statistic that about every 1 in 19 women in Malaysia will eventually develop breast cancer at some point of their life.
Okay, so is it 1 in 19 now or eventually 1 in 19?
Now, the number will actually get bigger. Like in US, the statistics is actually 1 in 9.
Okay, and do you see that trend increasing going forward?
Yes.
For Malaysia?
Yes, I think so.
What do you think is contributing to this?
I think we think that breast cancer is a multifactorial thing. So it's actually an interplay between genetic factors and also environmental factors. Like for example, of course, genetic does play a role, but most of the time, the cases which are familiar or have a family history are only about 10 to 20%. So we're talking about 80% of patients actually could have no family history at all of breast cancer. So it's just what we call a sporadic cases.
How do you deal with women who come in with you and to come in to see you, you know, who have been diagnosed with breast cancer? How do they take this news? I mean, a woman's breast is a huge part of her. What makes her a woman? You know, how do they usually react to this?
Okay, I think it's usually it comes as a shock, and then I think the most important thing at that point of time is actually to listen to them. Okay, give them a lot of time. Okay, because. Or if it's the very first time when you break the bad news, it actually takes a lot of time for them to sink in. And then they will go through the stages. So now they go through shock and then they have anger a little bit. And then sometimes they are in denial as well. So explain to them about the diagnosis and then say, this is what we have diagnosed. And then we think you are in this stage. And then what are the proposed options? I usually try to give them more than one option if it's suitable. And do not force them to make a decision then. Then it's like you should go for surgery tomorrow. I think, you know, these are the options that I told you about. You can go home and think about it. Discuss with your family members. Or if you think you have any more query, the next visit, you can actually bring along somebody who you think that would want to know this more together with you. And also always encourage them to go for a second opinion.
Okay, so you're open to that then.
Yes, I think that's important.
You know, earlier on I mentioned that a lot of patients come in at the advanced stages of breast cancer here in Malaysia, but 40% of them are diagnosed at the advanced stage. What factors do you take into account for late diagnosis?
Yes, actually, you compare to the West, you know, a lot of their breast cancer are mainly diagnosed as stage 1 or stage 0, stage 1. That's because they go for screening. When you go screen, means that you are actually doing scans, mammogram on patients who have no symptoms, who looks healthy. This is when you pick up the very early breast cancer with stage 0 and stage 1. But in Malaysia, women come forward when they have symptoms, when they feel a lump. By the time you can feel a lump, it's already more than 1 centimeter. So we're talking about at least a stage 1 or a stage 2. But majority of them actually present at the stage 3 or above. The reason being that first, the lack of screening, women not willing to come forward, a fear, you know, fear about mammogram, fear about what the possible management that the doctor will propose. Are they going to take off my breast, you know? Second thing is also the idea, in the sense that social stigma is that to let people know that you have breast cancer, they think that it's a shame, like you have done something wrong, there's something wrong with you. But actually, getting breast cancer is not a choice, and it's not because you did something wrong or you did something bad. But people feel there's a shame, you know, they want to keep it to themselves or keep it within the family. And third as well, alternative treatment. See, in Malaysia, we are lucky or unlucky in a way that we're multicultural, so we have a lot of alternative treatments. You know, you have Malay's traditional treatment, you have Chinese traditional treatment, you have Indian traditional treatment. So when you fail one, you can actually go the others as well. So by the time they go one round, it could be a 6 month or 1 year delay.
And then the cancer grows.
Yeah, we just get more advanced.
Okay. What do you say to patients who have said that they have sought alternative treatment and their cancer has gone away? What do you say to them?
So it's important, you know, to say that, you know, it's good to hear that, you know, but we had to understand the story from the beginning. At what stage were they diagnosed? You know, did they have any proper investigation result, you know? And is there any evidence to show that the cancer has shrunken or cancer has disappeared? Because sometimes it could be that you don't feel the lump so well anymore, but the lump maybe just actually become more diffuse, but it does not really disappear. So I think I will not say no, definitely no, when you get a cancer, your cancer will never disappear. But I think we still need to do a proper investigation to prove that the cancer is no longer there. If it's not there anymore, yeah, I'm very happy for you. But we just have to be very, very sure.
Okay, so I suppose the biggest fear amongst any woman is that she will lose her breast.
Yes.
When do you decide a mastectomy is the way forward? And when do you decide that, you know, you can do a lumpectomy? You don't have to undergo a mastectomy.
Yes. I think that's actually the biggest fear of most women. The moment you told them that, you know, you have breast cancer, they say, do I have to lose my breast? Mm-hmm. Most of the time we say, most probably not. Okay. The reason being that, see, whether you do a lumpectomy or a breast-conserving surgery or what we call a lumpectomy, mastectomy and lumpectomy, actually they give you the same amount or same duration of survival. So it's not saying that if you do a mastectomy, you will live longer. That's not true. Okay, so how do we decide that who is suitable for a lumpectomy and who is suitable for a mastectomy? It usually depends on the tumor size, okay, and also basically it's the ratio of the tumor size compared to the breast size. So if you have a 1 centimeter tumor, of course, most of the time you get away with a lumpectomy, because when you do a lumpectomy, you take away some breast tissue. The breast may be smaller by about 10 to 20%, but it's still acceptable cosmetically. That is fine. But if you have a lump which is 4 centimeter and then you want to do a lumpectomy and then you left another 50% of the breast. So it's kind of like cosmetically, we don't think so it's acceptable. It doesn't really serve a purpose of doing a lumpectomy. Then this patient may be better treated with a mastectomy. Of course, lumpectomy have its own issues in the sense that to do a lumpectomy, you must be agreeable or also suitable for radiotherapy afterwards. Because when you have lumpectomy plus radiotherapy, then we talk about your survival is same as somebody who had undergone a mastectomy for the same stage of disease. If you only have lumpectomy but without the radiotherapy, the chances of the cancer coming back in the breast, we call a local recurrence, is actually high. So it's not recommended. So those patients who are like pregnant or patients who have some connective tissue disease or who have already had previous radiotherapy, they are not suitable for radiotherapy. Then in this kind of patient, then lumpectomy is not really a choice. It's not really an option. Then you have to offer a mastectomy. So, and also for patients who have tumor which is not only localized, that means we divide breast into 4 quadrants, okay? If you have cancer in more than 1 quadrant, you know, then it's actually quite a big area that is being covered. Then you are also not suitable for a lumpectomy. Then mastectomy will be a more suitable choice. So this will be the things that we discuss with patients. We try to determine that what is the best surgical options.
Are you okay if a patient decides or goes against what you are proposing? I insist I want a lumpectomy as opposed to a mastectomy when you feel a mastectomy is a much better option. How do you deal with that?
It also depends on what is the reason behind it. Is it because they are fear of appearance or they fear that, you know, there's no sensation? If there's only a unifocal tumor, you know, we can actually try to give neoadjuvant chemotherapy to shrink the tumor. This would be one of the choice for those who would like to have a lumpectomy instead of mastectomy. So if let's say the tumor is 4 centimeter now, you give them chemotherapy, it shrinks to 1 centimeter, then yes, you're suitable for lumpectomy again. So this would be another option to explore with the patients. If let's say you have multifocal disease and then, you know, multifocal disease means that you have tumor in more than 1 quadrant, mm-hmm. You're actually not suitable for a breast conserving surgery. I would not really want to do it because I feel that this is against the principle of surgery, although this patient's wish. So I give them some time to think about it. I'll encourage them to see a second opinion. If there's another doctor who can offer a better solution, I'll say go ahead.
Okay. So treatment options for breast cancer is usually surgery, the usual radiation as well as chemotherapy, depending on what is the combination. Okay, we're discussing when does the breast have to be removed. Dr. Tan Gee Hui, a consultant breast and oncoplastic surgeon from Park City Medical Center, in the studio with me. We'll come back and find out a little bit more about complications after surgery and how you manage this, as well as if there is a mastectomy. Let's find out a little bit more about breast reconstruction as an option, coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In our Health and Living segment, Dr. Tan Gee Hui, a consultant breast and oncoplastic surgeon from Park City Medical Center, we're discussing breast cancer and when the breast actually has to be removed. I think most of us women don't want to lose the breast. I mean, it makes up a huge part of who a woman really is, and it's unfortunate if it does indeed have to be removed. So what are the options if you do have to do a mastectomy? What are your options of post-surgery to look? I think aesthetics is really important to a large extent. How do we manage that?
Yeah. So back to the question that we discussed just now, that if the patient insists on having a lumpectomy, and when they are not suitable for a lumpectomy. So when mastectomy is proposed, we can actually tell them, because the reason most of the time they want to insist on lumpectomy is they don't want to lose the appearance. Then you say you can actually go ahead for a mastectomy with reconstructions. So that would be actually a better option for these patients, because insist on lumpectomy when it's not suitable, you are risking the oncological margin or oncological safety of the disease. But if you do a mastectomy plus a reconstruction, it's a win-win situation. You get rid of the disease, you get it oncologically clear, and yet patient get a new breast. So image and appearance, not really an issue.
And is reconstruction carried out immediately after the surgery, or do you wait for a while?
You can actually do immediate reconstructions. That means that we always say, go into the surgery with two breasts, you wake up with two breasts as well. Mm-hmm. So we take off the breast during the surgery. At the same time, we just build a new breast for the patients.
And how do you build a new one?
Okay, there are a few methods of doing it. So one we can do is implant. It means that we put a silicone implant inside the breast, and then that will give them the appearance, the fullness. Second is that we can always do what we call autologous reconstructions. Maybe we take patient's own tissue. So you can have your own tissue and your fat from your own body to become your new breast. So we can take it from the back muscle, which is called the latissimus dorsi or the LD flap. You can take it from the tummy, we call the tram flap. Or sometimes we do a free flap, which is also from the tummy, we call a DIAP flap. All these are possible. So, for example, if you take it from a tummy, we always tell the patient, it's like you have a tummy tuck and you get a new breast.
Okay.
So, actually, this is a more favorable. A lot of patients actually like these options.
What about the nipple?
The nipple, okay. Some surgeons, they will do a nipple reconstruction at the same time. Sometimes, if the nipple is not involved, we can actually keep the nipple. So, what we call is a nipple-sparing mastectomy. So, we actually keep the nipple. And, of course, during the surgery, we'll send the nipple-based tissue for checking. If it's not involved negative, you can actually keep the nipple. But just that after the surgery, they don't have the same sensation.
Right.
And it doesn't give you erection as well. But most people are actually very fine with that. So, if you can't keep the nipple, what you can do is that you can do tattoo, and you can also do a small local flap to make the projection at much later.
Okay, so all of this, but that's done later on.
Nipple reconstruction, some surgeons do it at the same setting, but the tattooing usually is much later.
Okay. This year, the US FDA has cautioned about the possible link between breast implants and breast implant-associated anaplastic reconstruction. Are you concerned about that?
Yes, I think we will explain to the patient. Of course, although the number is very small, but it's, of course, when you don't want to get extra cancer because of the implant.
Yes.
So it's always a discussion that, there are some cases and it's only for texture implant, if so far that we have known. Though there's no specific company which per se that associated with this. So we will discuss and say that, this is the thing that we have had, but, the number of cases compared to the number of women who have undergone implant is very much different. So if you think that you would like to take the risk, of course, we'll monitor you after the surgery. Then we can go ahead. If not, you can consider other options. For example, autologous reconstruction.
Do you see many women opting for reconstruction today?
Yes, we're actually seeing a good thing. We're actually seeing more Malaysian women opting for reconstruction.
Okay. And what are the factors that need to be taken into consideration? Is it just cost?
I think cost is only part of it. Mainly, it's actually first, they must be aware there's such options. Okay. And now the awareness has increased. They know that they can actually ask the doctor, and also the doctor will offer the information. Second is that also patients' physical conditions, in the sense that usually reconstruction is offered to patients who have no severe medical problem. For example, if you're diabetic or hypertension, so we're not well controlled, you're not really a very good candidate for reconstruction, especially you're thinking of using your own tissue because your blood vessels are not really healthy.
Right.
So when you have a tissue reconstruction, the flap, that means that the new breast survive based on the blood supply. So if blood supply are not good, the new breast may just die off. That is one thing. So cost is an issue because a lot of women, they are go under insurance cover.
Yes.
Some insurance company are still a little bit reluctant to cover the reconstruction part of the breast surgery.
Because they look at it as aesthetic.
Yeah, so we actually have to tell them again and again, this is not aesthetic, this is not breast augmentation, it's part of the treatment. So we are still, as a fraternity, we're still fighting for that so that they can cover this as part of the breast cancer treatment. Because I think it's really important, because you not only treat them physically, you treat them as a whole. They feel psychologically much more complete and happier if they have a reconstructed breast.
I think women should come together and fight for that, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah. What kind of post-surgical follow-up then, I mean, is required after you reconstruct and all of that? How do you ensure that there will be no possible recurrence of the cancer?
Okay, I think no one can assure you that the cancer will never occur, which is that how we minimize the risk of recurrence. Okay, so regular follow-up is definitely needed. So initially, maybe post-surgery, the first month, we'll see you a couple of times, maybe in a week or 2 weeks, you know, just to check on the wound and everything, make sure there's no wound complications. So for routine checkup, usually the first 2 years, we'll see you every 3 months. And then after that, the subsequent year, we'll see you every 6 months. After 5 years, we can just see you every year.
Okay. And, you know, just let's talk about Angelina Jolie. I think we cannot talk about mastectomies without talking about Angelina Jolie. I mean, she underwent a prophylactic mastectomy in 2013 because she had the BRCA1 gene. I know now you can do gene tests determine your risks, which is what Angelina Jolie actually did. And we do offer that here in Malaysia,
yes,
together with genetic counseling and all of that. But what is the risk of cancer developing even after preventive mastectomy?
Yes, the risk is actually not zero. So she still stands a risk, but if she's less than 10%. So I think it's still a good trade off in the sense that if she does nothing, her chances of getting a breast cancer may be about 60 to 70% for her lifetime.
So it comes down to
less than 10%.
10%, okay. So have you done prophylactic mastectomies
we
for
do.
Malaysians in Malaysia?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
But that's, of course, that's after a lot of counselings and all the things that, you know, we make patients understand the consequence of it, that they didn't make the decision just out of like the moment of fear, mm-hmm. you know, they're very clear that they know this is what they want and they will stick to the decision to the end. Then, yes, we do offer them.
And the role of the spouse in this decision making process, do you speak to couples together before they make that decision?
We do ask, you know, the patients, you know, do you want to bring somebody? You know, if you think that they want the spouse to be involved in the decision making, they will come. Okay. If not, sometimes a lot of them are single ladies, then they're just happy to make the decision on their own.
Okay, so whether it's prophylactic or it's a mastectomy because of cancer, but how best would you advise couples to manage this?
I usually say, as we always say, it's patient autonomy. The decision should still come from patient. But in our society, I think husband or spouse play a very important role in helping them to make the decision as well. So we find it easier actually for them to bring their spouse in so they will make the spouse understand. A lot of time, you know, they will say the hearsay, you know, who and who, or they Google or whatsoever. Then they read some information which is not true and they convey to their wife. And this, with that, then the wife's convinced the husband know better, you know. So that become, then we have to sort of like undo the whatever misconception that they have. So we actually encourage them to bring their spouse along, ask them, do you have any questions or anything that you want to ask us? Then we can explain to both of them so they're on the same page. They also understand the treatment process. So they will stick together and go through the plan together.
What kind of physical and emotional issues do patients usually encounter post-mastectomy?
I think post-mastectomy, especially for those if you do not have a reconstruction, they always feel that, you know, they have lost one breast. They feel that physically they may be incomplete as a woman. I think, though we tell them this is not true, you know, you're a woman because you... It's you are who you are. It's not because of your body. It's that you lost an appendix. You will not feel incomplete. You're not going to miss your appendix. So,
easier said than done. You don't see your appendix.
Yeah, but you see your breasts.
Yeah, I mean, you want to wear that dress. You want to wear, you know, you want to wear anything and everything again.
Yes.
What about prosthetics? Does that play a role?
Yes. So for those women who didn't have a reconstruction, we always say, okay, you can consider having a breast prosthesis, you know, that you can wear. You actually feel the same, you know, underneath the bra. And then from the appearance outward, you actually can't really tell which is the real breast. This is one good option and it's actually available in Malaysia. And actually our government had done a very good job for the past few years to actually have some scheme to help the patient to get free prosthesis. So, which is very good. Second is that we say now you didn't have a reconstruction, but you can consider it later stage. If you think that you would like to have a reconstruction, why not? You come for a delayed breast reconstruction. That should be offered to the patient as well.
Okay, which is possible too.
Yes.
Okay, when you're ready to do it.
Exactly.
For younger women, breast cancer tends to be diagnosed in the later stages in a more aggressive form. What are the implications on the risks of metastasis and recurrence, and is a mastectomy an option in this situation?
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when the cancer get a bit more aggressive, in the sense we're talking about high-grade cancer or we're talking about a triple-negative breast cancer, which is one of the subtype of breast cancer, tend to be a bit more aggressive and actually affect younger women. So this patient usually will have more aggressive adjuvant treatment, means that they may have chemotherapy, even the tumour is very small, and then they usually will put on prolonged hormonal therapy if they are suitable. So, and also the surveillance will be much more closer. And of course, for women who are very young, fertility is always an issue that we need to consider before we, you know, tell them this is the best for you. But see, the best is from the doctor point of view. From a patient point of view, this may not be what they want because they may want to have kids. You know, they want to have their own family. So cancer is only part of their life. So we have to discuss fertility issue with them before we start any treatment. So let's say they haven't have child, you can actually think about to freeze their eggs, you know, or freeze the embryo, which is available as well in Malaysia. Then they can go for the treatment, you know, without worrying that, you know, they're going to be infertile by the time they finish their chemotherapy.
Okay, so there are ways in managing this. It's not all doom and gloom, after all. Where does a mastectomy come in when it comes to more advanced stages of cancer? And for metastatic cancer, you did mention when it has spread, does that mean a mastectomy is inevitable? You don't really have a choice?
No, actually for metastatic breast cancer, we're talking about stage 4 breast cancer, actually mastectomy is not the most important, because when you have a disease which is already widespread, mastectomy only gives you local control. But what you need is a systemic control of the disease. So at that point, a chemotherapy or a hormone therapy will play a more important role, because you need to control the disease and in a systemic level. Okay, so mastectomy is not really the first choice of treatment. We only do mastectomy for somebody who has a metastasis if they need a local symptom control. For example, you have a breast that is bleeding, fungating, you know, that you can't go out because the breast is so big and so heavy, and you know, with an open wound that you need dressing every day. Then yes, you will do a mastectomy, but this is what we call a palliative mastectomy. So palliative surgery, so the patient does not suffer from the symptoms of the breast, but that does not really change the overall survival or the change of prognosis, even if you do or if you did not do the mastectomy.
I'm very curious. Well, what is the standard protocol? It feels like surgery when it comes to some sort of cancers which have spread to the lymph nodes and stuff like that. The options seem to be more chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and then surgery comes last. Mm-hmm. Is that really what we're practicing here in Malaysia?
That depends, because when you say about you already involved the lymph node, when we talk about involved the lymph node, that means there is a chance of systemic involvement. When we use the word systemic involvement, it means that it could have spread to other parts of the body, whether it has shown up or it haven't shown up. Because you see, cancer in breast, they actually travel through the lymphatic channel. So once you can find that in your lymph node, they could have traveled everywhere to your body as well. So your idea is, if you take out the breast, you tackle the breast, but whatever has gone out from your breast already has gone out. Your train has left. So what you need to do is to retrieve all those people and identify those bad guys and kill them. So this is a time that when you need chemotherapy and hormonal therapy. Radiotherapy is also for local. It's just like a surgery. It's basically control so that it doesn't come out from the breast. But chemo and hormonal therapy, that we, the tablet that we give, is the one that can act as a systemic level.
Okay, so meaning it goes and kills it all over the place.
That's right.
Wherever it's gone. When you suspect that it has traveled to the lymph node, sometimes it may not be the case. Sometimes when you go in, it hasn't actually gone into the lymph nodes. That could possibly happen. And why does it happen? Why do you see it in the lymph nodes when it's not there?
Because you see, when we see it in the lymph nodes, it's just a radiological image tell us that the lymph node probably look abnormal. So just say probably look abnormal. So, but they cannot be 100% sure unless you do a biopsy on the lymph node. Okay. Sometimes we do that. Sometimes we do not. So if we do not do that, what we can do is that during the surgery, we can do frozen section on the lymph nodes. So we can do a technique, what we call a sentinel lymph node, for those that the lymph node looks normal or not grossly involved. You know, it's like if you have a lymph node which is as big as an egg, then you know this lymph node definitely is involved. But it's like you're not very sure, then what we can do is that we can do sentinel lymph node. So this means that you identify the first few lymph nodes which is drained from the breast, and then you send them for frozen section. The pathologist can tell you within half an hour whether the lymph nodes is involved or not.
During surgery?
Yes. From there, you can decide on whether to remove all the lymph nodes or you don't have to.
Do most of us have abnormal-looking lymph nodes? I'm very curious now.
We may have enlarged lymph nodes, but usually they are normal-looking.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Enlarged but normal-looking but not abnormal at the same time.
Because it could be reactive lymph node. Reactive lymph node is as a reaction to something. For example,
else.
You have an infection nearby. That could trigger the lymph node to be enlarged as well. And this is a more common reason for lymph node to enlarge rather than cancer.
Okay. Are there possible complications after a mastectomy?
Yes, of course. For after mastectomy, a lot of time patients have, and then we talk about the psychological, you know, the effect on the patient that they feel incomplete. Physical-wise, sometimes, you know, they can have something we call a constant pain. It's a phantom, we sort of call it sort of like phantom pain or post-mastectomy neuropathic pain. This usually patient will require some analgesia for some time to tie them off. And of course, and also if you have a breast which is relatively big, and then if you do not wear prosthesis, after some time, you know, you may have actually imbalance, a little bit of imbalance at the back as well. So we always say we encourage patient to wear prosthesis if you do not have a reconstructions.
Okay, that is just because naturally it's going to affect the balance of it. When women actually go through all of this post-surgery, what are some of their challenges in terms of going back to leading a normal life? Are there challenges at all? Or do they eventually just get used to it?
Of course, there is, you know. I think they go through a period. There's a support group is actually very important. So that they know they're not alone. Other people have done it. And then they want to learn how other people have done it as well. So eventually, we'll say the breast cancer, it is only like part of, it should not be like the end of your life story, basically. It's like your life stopped there. It's just something that you've gone through at that point of time. The whole treatment, sometimes you need about 1 year to 1.5 years to complete the entire breast cancer treatment. The rest of the time, you just need a 3-monthly surveillance. You can actually go back to work. You can go back to your active lifestyle. If you are a yoga teacher, you can go back, do yoga. If you're a sports person, you can actually go back for sport as well. So it doesn't really affect you. It's just that most patients, they will actually make a lifestyle changes. They will say, I slow down, I take time to smell the flowers, I realize what is more important in life. So we do see that kind of changes in their life. Nobody will go back to the super hectic life. Actually, most of them, they do not.
And in terms of sports and all of that, are there any limitations?
Usually, no, unless you have a reconstruction on your using the LD muscle, the latissimus dorsi, the back muscle, then you may lose a little bit of strength if you like rock climbing. Other than that, you can do normal activities just as usual.
Okay, and what are some of the latest developments in breast cancer surgery?
For breast cancer surgery, I think as for Malaysia, now we're seeing more and more usage of intraoperative radiotherapy. Okay, like remember we talk about if you do a lumpectomy, you must have radiotherapy. So this, with these advances, actually with this machine, you can actually give the radiotherapy during the surgery.
Wow.
So yes, when you take out the tumor, you can actually use the radiotherapy to shine directly at the tumor bed and the tissue around it, because this is the area that's highest chance to have a recurrence.
Yep.
So this will actually save the patient the trouble of coming back for radiotherapy later. Sometimes it may not replace the entire course of radiotherapy, but it does take care of part of it. It's just to shorten your radiotherapy period.
Because it's very direct.
Yes, exactly.
During the surgery. Okay, fantastic. So would you have a message on whether and when the breast has to go?
Mastectomy is not a dead sentence. Okay, there's always an option of reconstruction. So do not be scared to come forward just because you think that you may require mastectomy, but always ask about reconstructions.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Tan Gee Hui, a consultant breast and oncoplastic surgeon from Park City Medical Center, speaking to us about mastectomies, breast cancer, and everything else that goes along with it. Counseling, genetic testing on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.